enter the command to start the recording, so that's done. And I want to also let you know that if any time today that you have a question for Nancy, if you've called in on the conference bridge line, just dial star 2 on your phone keypad. We'll see that you'd like your line unmuted, and we can do so. If you are online, you've accessed us via the Internet, then there's a small question box just under the link. Type your question in there. It'd be helpful if you put a first name, city, and state, and submitted that to us, and we'll make sure the question gets asked. And, yes, this is being recorded, and it will be available shortly after the webinar at republicmagazine.com/webinar, as all of our past webinars are posted there for download, for click and instant play, for sending to others and sharing. It's a good way to get the information out, so we encourage you to send it out to your list. With that, what I want to do is go ahead and introduce Nancy Appleton, PhD. She's from San Diego, California. She's a clinical nutritionist, researcher, and she's lectured all over the English-speaking world, and she's author of Lick the Sugar Habit, Healthy Bones, Stopping Inflammation, and her latest, Suicide by Sugar. She has a BS from UCLA in Food and Nutrition and a PhD from Walden University in Health Services. Her award-winning dissertation was written on an alternative to the germ theory, which has come out in a book, The Curse of Louis Pasteur. Her main interest is studying homeostasis and what each of us does to upset our body chemistry and cause our own illnesses, rather than looking for remedies to upset or remedies to illnesses. She has spoken all over the English-speaking world and has been on more than 600 radio and TV programs. Her research from medical journals shows that we create our own disease by what we eat, do, think, say, and feel. She believes that you stop doing to the body what you did to make it sick, and the body will heal itself. Today she'll speak about sugar and exactly what it does to the body, the consequences of eating too much sugar, and how to lick the sugar habit. Boy, I know that can touch a lot of people. This information is from two of her books, Lick the Sugar Habit and Suicide by Sugar. Let's just kind of jump right on in. I know we'll probably have some people join in with us, Nancy, to converse with us later on. But let's go ahead and cover some material so that we can move into that later. And the first thing I wanted to ask you is, in your book, Suicide by Sugar, you discuss the overwhelming amount of Americans who are addicted to sugar. Describe your own sugar addiction. How did you handle it?
Well, yes, I am a sugarholic. I will always be one. It's certainly gotten easier now after 20 years of not eating sugar. But I used to not be able to walk by Famous Amos or Haagen-Dazs or a Hershey's candy bar. Now it's a little easier because it's been such a long time. Yes, I was addicted as a kid. I lived in Los Angeles, and we had a little bakery truck that would come to our back door, and I'd meet the truck down the street. I could order anything I wanted, and it would be charged to my mom, who didn't look at the bill that much. So I had donuts and nut bars and candy bars and you name it, and I'd hide it. But you see, I was a tennis player. I actually was a national junior tennis champion, so I could consume an incredible amount of calories because I played tennis from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock every afternoon. But I'll have to tell you, 50% went to sugar. I'll win the tennis tournament and treat myself to a hot fudge sundae, and lose a tennis tournament and treat myself to a bag of Oreo cookies. So winner or loser, I was certainly a loser. I had no idea of this. And then I went to UCLA, and I was a foods and nutrition major there, but I learned absolutely nothing. Eat a balanced diet. Well, to me, and what it meant, a cookie in both hands so that I was balanced, right? So anyway, life went on, and I kept getting more symptoms. arthritis and boils and canker sores and go to the doctor, and the doctor would say, give me a pill. Nobody ever said, what do you put in your mouth, of course. We're talking about 40 years ago, I guess. And finally, at age 40, I had crippling arthritis, and I weighed 155, I now weigh 125, yelling at my kids, and I was just a mess. And somebody said, why don't you go into a health food store and see what you can find out? And I read a book called The Pulse Test, where you take your pulse before you eat a food and afterward and see if it's changed, gone up or down. That food is not metabolizing correctly in your body. And I did that, started removing the foods that I was allergic to, and but being addicted to sugar, it took a long time to get rid of that, and many times, I guess I would say. But anyway, I started getting better, and I realized that these foods that were I was putting in my mouth were affecting exactly how I felt. And the arthritis went away. The boils, I never had any more boils. Canker sores, they disappeared. And then finally I was able to lick the sugar habit. And at age 40-some-odd, I finally turned my health around. And it's been wonderful since then.
Very interesting. Well, then I'm wondering, maybe you could tell us a little bit more. Because I think a lot of us think, a little sugar, you know, it's okay. And sometimes they don't realize just how much sugar they're consuming. What would you say, I mean, so that we really understand, what does sugar do to the body?
Well, first let's talk about what I mean by sugar. Some people don't know. And I mean that table sugar, which is also called sucrose. But most of our it's made out of beaten cane. But where most of our sugar comes from now is corn, because the industry found out that it was a lot cheaper to do corn. So corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup solids, dextrose, dextrine, all of that is from corn. So I mean any one of those things, but I also mean brown sugar, turbinado sugar, raw sugar, honey, maple syrup, barley malt, rice syrup, all of these, and agave nectar is the worst. But I mean, all these different sugars upset the body chemistry is the bottom line and suppress the immune system. So don't kid yourself that you can change to honey or to rice syrup, which you find in health food stores, because it's a simple sugar and it's in such a simple form, it needs no digestion. And it literally can hit the bloodstream almost under the tongue because it's in such a simple form. We don't need enzymes or any digestive material to digest it. It just goes boom, hits the bloodstream, and then suppresses the immune system is the bottom line. But let me explain exactly what happens when you eat that sugar.
Could I ask you something real quick before you
sure.
launch into that? I'm wondering because, my gosh, there's so much information about, well, you're fine if it's, you know, if you use fructose, it's not high corn syrup or anything like that. It's just fructose. It's from fruit. Is that okay, or what's your assessment of that?
Fructose is different than high fructose corn syrup. Comes from fruit, and if you eat the fruit whole, that's fine. There's fiber in it, tons of vitamins and minerals. It does not hit the bloodstream immediately. It has to be digested, and for a healthy person, there's nothing wrong with fruit. Maybe not 10 servings a day, but two or three small servings are fine. Now, while we're on to this, let me explain that a glass of orange juice has this, and grape juice and apple, orange, and grape juice have approximately the same amount of sugar that a Coca-Cola has. And I feel it's almost as detrimental. So eat your fruit whole. Don't drink your fruit. Eat your fruit whole. Because, again, the orange juice, apple, and grape juice will do the same thing. It hits the bloodstream very fast and upsets the body chemistry. Okay?
Okay, and the other thing I was going to ask you about is, what about stevia and xylitol as substitutes?
Okay, there are many sugar substitutes. And there, as we know, there's aspartame and sucanat, and many of the others are using today that you find in products and in Vaughn's and Safeway and Ralph's. I don't recommend any one of those. They're chemicals that our body has to make into a substance that it can use or excrete it from the body, because our body does not have the metabolic enzymes to digest chemicals. So I do feel that stevia, for a person who's not addicted, and that's another whole subject that maybe we'll get into later, the reason that stevia comes from the plant of a Brazilian or South American tree, and it has sweetness, taste. Some people don't like it, but there's two or three brands. You can try different ones, and they have a slight different flavor. And it's not addictive, but to a degree it's not addictive. But if you are a sugarholic, quit the sugar and start the stevia, it keeps you craving more sweetness. So I don't recommend that. We'll talk about how to let the sugar have it later on in the program. But again, if you just like a little stevia in your lemonade or your coffee or whatever, you can actually cook with it too, and you're not addicted to sugar, then I think it's a fine idea. Now, what was the other one you said, stevia?
Xylitol.
Oh, xylitol. Those mannitol, xylitol, and there's other tols too, those are what we call sugar alcohols. And they certainly don't hurt the body, as far as I'm concerned, like aspartame and sucanat. But they're not a whole food. And they get them from a carbohydrate. I think they can get them from three or four different ones. Whether it's probably corn, because, again, that's the cheapest. But give the sweetener. And actually, some people feel, used it in gum, it helps the teeth. If used as a sweetener in gum, it helps the teeth. But again, I'm for whole foods, so I really can't put it in the same class as aspartame, but I don't think it's a good substitute. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's move right into, what does sugar do to the body? And I'm probably going to want you to follow up with that, of what kind of health risks are associated with sugar consumption.
Okay. Let's first explain exactly from the time you take the sugar into your mouth till the time it suppresses the immune system. This is the biochemical pathway it takes. And again, how much sugar is too much sugar? Write that down. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Okay. You put the sugar in your mouth, and as it digests, it upsets the minerals. It makes some of them deficient, and some of them actually more than there were to begin with. Why this happens, who knows, and nobody knows yet. But it changes the minerals in the body. When this happens, and some of them become depleted, when this happens, our enzymes can't work as well. Now, what are enzymes? They help us digest our food. Those are digestive enzymes. And we have metabolic enzymes that help our eyes and our kidneys and our liver and many other parts of the body. But just talking about the digestive enzymes. Okay, every one of those digestive enzymes is dependent upon a mineral to work, to function. Now, you have just depleted your minerals by eating the sugar. Therefore, all the enzymes can't work. When the enzymes can't work, all the food doesn't digest. And what happens is it sits in the gut, and the enzymes can't work on it because they're not working, and the food starts to putrefy, sitting in the gut, not being able to digest. This putrefaction upsets the lining or irritates the lining of the gastrointestinal tract, and these partially digested food that, again, as I say, can't digest because the enzymes aren't there, irritates the lining of the gastrointestinal tract. And so some of this, and the cells widen, and the spaces between the cells widen, and this partially digested food gets into the bloodstream where it doesn't belong. Now, I was laughed about this because my first book, Lick the Sugar Habit, has been out 25 years, and it's still on the market. It's actually, I guess, a classic today. And the new book, Sweet Suicide, has Suicide by Sugar, has brought much up-to-date new research and lots of new shocking information. But anyway, so this food is in now in the bloodstream where it doesn't belong. And it's now called, they have a name for it, a couple names. It's called the leaky gut syndrome or gut permeability. The doctors know that there is such a thing as this. And so this food is now in the bloodstream where it doesn't belong. It should be, if it's going to get in the bloodstream, which it's supposed to, but it's broken down from the protein to amino acids, from the fats to fatty acids, and the carbohydrates to simple sugars, but it hasn't broken down. So now it's in the bloodstream swimming around, causing havoc in the body. And it can go to the face and cause the classic symptoms of allergy, the runny eyes, the runny nose, the scratchy throat, the itchy ears. It can go to the brain. They used to think there was a blood-brain barrier. Now they know there's no such thing. And this partially digested food can go to the brain and cause anger, fatigue, depression, schizophrenia, headaches. It can go to the nerves and cause multiple sclerosis. It can go to the joints, this partially digested food, and cause arthritis. So it swims around just causing havoc in the body until finally your immune system, the white blood cells of your body, the Pac-Man of your body, look at this foreign invader and say, hey, you can't get in the cells. You're too big. You're causing havoc here. I must take you out like I would a bacteria or a virus. So the immune system comes to your defense and escorts this partially digested food out of the body. But you see, your immune system wasn't to do this. Every time you eat sugar, every time you eat rancid fats, lots of other things, but sugar is the biggest offender. So finally, you exhaust your immune system, which of course opens the door to both infectious and degenerative diseases. It really just sort of depends on your family background, what the weaknesses have been in your body, what you were genetically born with, as well as what bacteria or virus is in the neighborhood at the time as to whether you will get infectious or degenerative or both diseases when you have suppressed your immune system. So stop doing to the body what you did to make it sick, and the body will heal itself. Yes, I can get to people and remove the sugar and remove dairy and remove wheat and those three, and I can probably get 75% of the people healthy again. The symptoms go away. The other 25, we have to deal with fungus. We have to deal with parasites. We have to deal with a few other things. But once those are dealt with and the person's changed their diet to a healthy diet, then it's amazing what happens. So there you are.
Very interesting. Well, a couple of other questions come to mind. Can it just really hit you as far as the effect of sugar suddenly later in life? Like maybe you are fine with it early part of your life, maybe the first two or three decades, but maybe later on all of a sudden sugar just really hits you and does all kinds of things. Is that the case, or is it typically going to always be a difficult thing and show up in it, at least in minor ways initially and maybe progressively worse? Or how does that all work?
That's a great question. It's superb. Let's see if I can explain it to you. Degenerative diseases don't come up overnight. They come up very slowly. Cancer, arthritis, first you get a pain in a joint, and then the pain goes away, and then it comes back again and gets more forceful. And many times inflammation sets in, and your hands or your neck become swollen. But it takes a while for you to upset your body chemistry, to throw it out of what I call homeostasis. This is a word that was developed by Walter Cannon, a Harvard professor, who coined this word, and it's the balance in the body. And everything has to be in balance. And once you throw that sugar in, it throws the endocrine system out of balance. It throws the minerals out of balance. And when this happens, the body has to work very hard to try to get back to homeostasis. And finally, it says, I can't do this anymore. So some people are more lucky than others that they can last longer, as you say, two or three generations, and nothing happens, and all of a sudden, boom. Other people, now kids are having, you know, children used to die more of accidents, putting their a finger in an electrical cord or, you know, something like that, running in the street. Children die more now of cancer than any other disease. And yes, they probably genetically were born with a weak immune system. But what we're doing to kids today in terms of soft drinks and sugar, et cetera, is a crime. And so some people from an early age have symptoms. And I'll tell you, I know three or four, even more, 80-year-olds, and I'm not going to tell them what to eat, drink. They've caroused and had sugar and alcohol and everything else all of their life, and they're still well. So it just depends. And the people that I like to talk to are the people who are sick, who have symptoms. Now, many people, when I ask somebody, are you sick? The person will say, well, no, I'm not sick. And I say, good. Do you take any pills? Oh, yeah, I take a pill for high blood pressure. I take a pill for Crohn's disease, you know. But once they take that pill, the symptom goes away, so they think they're healthy. I don't buy that one bit. And as they go along in life, there will be more symptoms and more problems if they just take the pill and don't change their lifestyle. So did that explain it, maybe?
It really did. I'm wondering, is it possible that people who have maybe a chronic sinus condition, a lot of mucus production, can that derive from the whole sugar situation
you're talking about? But you see, as I explained, when you eat the sugar, you upset your body chemistry. The minerals don't work. Therefore, the minerals get depleted. Therefore, the enzymes can't work. Therefore, all the food doesn't digest. And this partially digested food that gets into the bloodstream is a form of food allergy. So many people, because they've consumed so much sugar, become allergic to other foods. So when I said, if I can get people to take sugar, all forms of sugar, all dairy except butter, and all wheat products out of their diet for 1 week, if you have symptoms, you'd be amazed what happens. So I'm definitely saying that those allergies can be caused by sugar, by upset body chemistry, sugar being the biggest offender that upsets the body chemistry. But fried foods is another one. Eating too much food at one time, you exhaust your enzymes. And the enzymes say, I only have enough to eat to digest half this food. So the other half of the food gets into the bloodstream and becomes a food allergy, and the same thing happens. So that there are various things that go on in your life that can cause a suppression of the immune system. But again, sugar is the biggest offender. And let's go into, unless you want to follow up with this, how much sugar we eat, et cetera.
Well, yeah, I know there was a question we were talking about, you know, how much sugar is too much sugar. But I'm just wondering, just before we do that, in your expert opinion, how accurate are scientific statistics that we see about sugar and its effects on our health and well-being?
Well, I have to tell you, in, well, both my books, but my latest book, Suicide by Sugar, I have a, I think it's about 8 pages of reasons why sugar is ruining your health. I'm whipping through it now to find it. And each one of these, I have 140 reasons why sugar is ruining your health, all from medical journal articles. Here we go. Let me give you a few. Sugar can increase the size of the liver by making the liver cells divide. Sugar can increase the amount of liver fat. Sugar can damage the pancreas. Sugar can increase the body's fluid retention. Edema. Sugar is the number one enemy of the bowel movement. Sugar can cause myopia or nearsightedness. I could go on, but I won't. But there's 140 reasons in Suicide by Sugar. And each one of those, you can go to the medical journal article and read all about it. So it, once you suppress that immune system, it opens the door to, again, as I say, whatever your weakness is, there's a problem with it. Now, it, of course, it's not the only thing that can cause myopia or nearsightedness or liver fat or et cetera, but it is certainly one of the things that can do these things.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying, the information you're giving us, is not just some opinion or just, you know, you're thinking, well, maybe it's this or not, but it is well-researched and quite accurate and borne out by, you know, testing and documentation.
Yes, double-blind studies. Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, the back of my book, I'm just reading here, 151 to 168 are strictly medical journal articles proving throughout the book. I won't say anything that I can't find in a medical journal article. I stay as close to the medical profession as I can, but because I think that that's important to do. There's been too much written about various things that have no documentation, and many are incorrect. But I won't write anything unless I can find it in a journal.
That's great. That's really good place to come from with it. Okay, well, maybe we should go ahead and move into, you know, how much sugar is too much sugar, what's the right amount, the better types to go with if we're going to have something to sweeten things.
Okay. First of all, the average person eats 143 pounds of sugar a day. A year. That's approximately one half a cup a day. And it's, again, as I said, it's irrelevant whether it comes from honey or agave nectar. Please write that down. Let's talk about that afterwards. There are many different forms of sugar that go into that, but it's all added sugar. That 143 pounds does not include fruit. So it's a lot of sugar that we're eating today. The teenage boy eats twice that much. Now, in terms of soft drinks, they say that the average person drinks about 152 or so soft drinks a year. I think it's 14% are sugar-free, but I don't believe that the non-sugary soft drinks are any better than the sugar drinks, because there's so much else in that drink that is a problem other than the sugar. So that's how much we eat, and that's a lot of sugar. You see, we came from early man, able to metabolize food in certain chemical configurations. And once you change those chemical configurations, you don't have the evolutionary enzymes and digestive processes, bile, and other things that help you digest your food. And sugar, it is not one of those things that we can have evolved from early man. And so we don't have the mechanisms to digest sugar, particularly in the glut that we eat it with today.
Okay. Well, I wonder if you did want to say a little bit more about agave then.
Yeah. Well, that's the new buzzword, agave nectar. And let me explain that most table sugar and high fructose corn syrup is approximately 50% fructose and 50% glucose. Now you get into agave nectar and they've made it 95% fructose. And that's not the fructose that you have from the fruit. It is a processed fructose, and it's the fructose molecule in these simple sugars that's the killer. It's not the glucose. The path that glucose takes in the body is it goes to the pancreas and insulin secreted from the pancreas to help this glucose get into the blood, into the cells. The way fructose is digested is through the liver. It doesn't go to the pancreas at all. Therefore, it doesn't raise the blood sugar. Well, who cares? It raises the immune system. Anyway, so the fructose goes to the liver where it has to be metabolized. And the liver is not a good place to metabolize. It can do a small amount. But when you take all your sugar in the form of fructose, which agave nectar is, it's just a killer. So give the health community 5 years and the medical community 10 years to figure that out. I hope not. I've written a whole lot in Suicide by Sugar about agave nectar.
Well, it looks like, you know, many times they're very slow to wake up to the information that's already been well-researched and put out by people for quite a while. You know, it's almost like the tail is eventually having to wag that whole dog. So it's funny the way that works. How about, I mean, we've got all sorts of things. People say, well, maple syrup should be okay. You know, I could put a little bit of that on my pancakes or whatever, you know.
What is it?
Maple syrup? Maple syrup?
It's the same thing. It's a simple sugar. It hits the bloodstream very fast once you eat it. Absolutely not. Yeah, it comes from a tree. Honey comes from bees. That seems, quote, natural. But it's in that concentrated form, and actually, corn syrup and table sugar both have, and everybody remember this, because most people don't know. If you look at the back of any package that has sugar in it, you've got the nutritional facts. And one of the things they have is the carbohydrates, how much, and how much sugar in the form of grams. And everybody goes, well, you know, it says 19 grams. What does that mean? Well, I'm about to tell you. And I think the reason they put it in grams is because they really don't want you to know. Anyway, what 1 teaspoon of sugar has 4 grams of sugar also. So when you eat all this, let's give you an example of that, and that would be soft drinks. They have 12-ounce can. They have 40 grams of sugar in them, which is 10 teaspoons. That's a lot of sugar. The Heart Association just came out and said we should decrease the amount. The Heart Association get you, not diabetes or obesity. This is the Heart Association. We should decrease our sugar by 70%. That would mean that the average woman should only have 6 teaspoons of sugar a day. And again, a Coke has 10. And a man can have 9 teaspoons of sugar a day. This is what they say. Because they know that it raises, it confuses the insulin, all the sugar. The insulin stops working correctly, and insulin is implicated in heart disease. So there you are. Lots of new information is coming out now about what sugar is doing. Thank heavens.
Yes, it's about time. I hope that lots more will come out. You know, I know most Americans are eating all kinds of foods on a daily basis, but maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about some of the sugar-intensive foods that people are just commonly eating that never realizing how much sugar these foods actually contain.
Good idea. Let's take cranberry sauce. Yes, it's sweet, and it's from cranberries, but 94% of the calories in cranberry sauce is from sugar. Another one that's sort of a surprise is ketchup. Ketchup, again, is about the same. There's some tomatoes in it, so that it's much more than the cranberries. Strangely enough, cranberry sauce is a lot more sugar than cranberries. Ketchup, there's more tomatoes. Tomatoes are pretty sweet. Cranberries are pretty bitter. Anyway, there's just about the same, about 80% of the calories in ketchup is from sugar. Some other things that you might not think of is sushi. All sushi has it. Well, you say, where is it in the sushi? It's in the rice. And whether you buy it made or to a restaurant, it's all the same. They put sugar in the rice. Canned peas, there's another one. Start reading your labels. For all those words I said, you know, sucrose, glucose, fructose, high fructose corn syrup, maple syrup, all the rest of those, you'll be amazed how much sugar is in products. But I hope that you'll not have the opportunity to read many of those labels, and you'll start using more whole food that doesn't come from cans or cardboard boxes or containers or plastic or cellophane. And once you do that, you can't read the label, but you don't need to, because that has no added sugar in it in whole foods.
Well, it seems that, you know, unless we're real aware of what we're eating, what we're buying, what's in it, or, you know, if we even go out to eat, we don't know what's in that food. That's the thing. I mean, I've been to Indian buffets, and I just know that they must load it with sugar. Let's face it, they're all trying to market their food. They want it to be tasty and you know, be something you go, wow, this is great, and you eat lots of it, and you feel really happy with going there. But it's very destructive. So I think that we can fall victim to it, not having any clue how the food is prepared and what's being put in it.
Very true. I used to be sort of a witch when I was getting well and getting well of my canker sores and all those things that I had. And so that when I'd go into a restaurant, I'd say, first of all, is there a non-smoking section? Well, we don't have to worry about that anymore. Then I'd say, do you use non-dairy creamer or cream? Do you use butter or margarine? I mean, and then I'd say, if there was a salad dressing, I'd say, do you use sugar in your salad? I mean, people didn't like to go to dinner with me. Well, I don't do that quite so much anymore. A healthy body can get by with a teaspoon or two of sugar. I don't believe a sick body can do that, but a healthy body can. And they have the ability to metabolize it, and although it hits the bloodstream, there's not enough of it. Our brain needs 2 teaspoons of sugar at all times. But even if you eat no carbos, protein and fat break partially down into sugar. Most people don't know that. It's called the glyconeogenic pathway. But they do, and so you get sugar from protein and fats too. But let's think of some other foods that have sugar in them that most people don't know. Well, of course, the honey-baked ham. And many times they don't even call it honey-baked ham, but they put honey in it. What else? Bacon has ham in it. Look at your Morton salt label. It has sugar in it. Not very much, so don't worry about it. But it's just the idea that sugar is just used in so many things. And why? Because, number one, it's addictive. And as you said, the restaurant wants the people to feel full and eat a lot, and he wants them to come back for more of it. That's where he makes his money. So it's addictive and it's cheap. You can still buy 3 pounds of sugar for $1.50. It's the cheapest thing you can use, and many canned goods use it as fillers, just to so they don't have to spend as much on asparagus or whatever it is, because it is so cheap. And you know that the government still subsidizes sugar, beet and cane and corn, I guess, yeah. Anyway, it's just amazing that they do that, but they do.
Yes, they do. We've got a, you know, just a few questions that have come in over the internet, but we'll get those in a minute, so we know they're there, and we will move into them. I just thought maybe we cover a couple of other areas. What do you recommend parents do to prevent their children from becoming addicted to sugar?
That's a great question too, and it's hard. First of all, the parents have to be willing to change their diets too, because you can't say, you know, don't do that, kid. Don't do as I do as I tell you. That doesn't work. So it has to be a family affair. I am, to a degree, all for teaching about food and sugar in schools, but unless you get the PTA or the parents involved, again, forget it. Kids won't do it. They'll eat with their parents and what's in the house. So how do you stop a kid from being addictive? I've got two 12-year-old grandchildren now, and they've had very little sugar in their life. And let me tell you the advantage of this. One has been, they're twins, one has been on antibiotics once in 12 years. The other has not been on it at all. They eat whole foods. They don't eat much wheat. They eat not much dairy. Yes, the kids have, they don't have brittle bones. That's a hoax. They eat incredibly healthy food. And no cavities whatsoever, and the parents don't have to wake up in the middle of the night with a sick kid wondering whether they should go to the drugstore and buy medicine, or should they take them to emergency, should they call the doctor. My family hasn't had to do that. My daughter hasn't had to do that at all. And so forget the kids. Think about yourself and get your kids into whole foods. And they have to start early, I have to tell you. I didn't understand all this till my son was 7 and my daughter was 11. And I said, okay. I took them to Europe. We swapped homes and had a home over there. I said, okay, the first week you can each have the dessert of your choice, and one would have ice cream and I'd have to go to the bakery for the other. The second week they got a half of one. The third week they got one bite, and that was it. And in my house, I never had any more sugar. And, yes, I knew they ate it when they went out. I had no control over that. They were too old, of course, by this time. But they're both incredibly great now. But it took a long time. So that you, if you can start your kids out young, it's far easier, I have to tell you. But the whole family has to participate. And again, let me say one other thing. I think it's more important that you love your kids and support them and nurture them and bond with them rather than nagging them about sugar. Because at age 21, it takes a whole lot more of psychological, you know, transformation to change a kid who's been nagged and told what to do his whole life than about eating sugar, and he can change then. See, I didn't change till I was 40, and I'm 74 now and still doing very well. So, but if I had that other psychological problem, it could have been trouble. So I still think loving your kid is more important than nagging him.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's more of a nurturing, supportive atmosphere, like you said, rather than trying to be, well, I would say maybe controlling or laying down the law, or you cannot, or, you know, all that, but maybe just working with them in a very supportive way. Well, you know, if you take away, you know, if people understand that they need to move away from such a sugar addiction, a lot of people will say, yeah, but what, I got to have some kind of alternative. Isn't there some healthy alternative that I can turn to?
Well, let's see. Fruit, whole fruit, and let me tell you the fruit that has the least amount of sugar, which is melons and berries. Strangely enough, they have less sugar The ones that have the most, of course, are the dried fruits. And then we have apricots and peaches. They have more. Again, melons and berries, all the melons and berries, have a lot less sugar in them. So that would be one idea. In my books and in the new book, Suicide by Sugar, I have a whole section on desserts, or I don't even call them desserts, I guess that's what they would be, that have no sugar, no fruit in them. And I have food plans, and I have all sorts of ideas on what you can do. But these recipes, I use sweet potato, carob. These are excellent things that you can use that are sweet. Here's another one. I'm just looking here. Sweet potato pancakes, baked beets, sweet potato millet muffins, rich carob avocado mousse, carrot puff, beetroot dessert. Coconut is another great one to use. And always have sweet potatoes in the refrigerator that are cold and cooked. And so when you get that craving, you can go to the refrigerator and cut it in half or whatever and eat the sweet potato cold. And it's very good. So.
Okay. Well, do I understand it right? You have a practical life plan for breaking the sugar addiction and consuming healthier foods?
Yes. I have actually three food plans in the book. And it sort of depends on you, how many symptoms you have, what your weight, how you feel, how many drugs you're taking. And food plan three is the most strict. But food plan two and one, you can start on those and see how those. And I have to say that all of them deal 90% with whole foods. Rice crackers would be one exception. And sometimes like a can of tuna. There's some things that I won't. Peas, frozen peas, I'm not going to pea pod all day. But most of the food is whole food. Then I also have, how to lick the sugar habit. And I gave you one idea with the sweet potato. Well, a few other ideas might be, throw all that stuff out of your house. And when you have that craving, go to your fast food restaurant, buy as little as possible, and then eat as little as possible and throw the rest away. Do not take it home and go home. Another one would be to brush your teeth. There's a little sugar or some sugar substitute in toothpaste, don't worry about that. There's not enough to bother you. And then take a glass of water to fool your stomach. Another one would be to exercise at the time you crave the sugar, because it closes the apostat. Exercise closes the apostat that makes you crave a food or just hungry. Another thing is one of my favorites is to set a timer for 15 minutes when you're walking around ready to kill somebody for a piece of chocolate or whatever. Set it for 15 minutes and then go do something else. Pay your bills, or you can exercise or listen to music, whatever. And don't eat that food for 15 minutes. Many times the urge goes away. But the biggest deal is you have been in charge of that sugar for 15 minutes. It's probably more than you have in your whole life. So that's a wonderful way to start. Then if you have to have it, next time set it for 20 minutes, etc. But and then another one would be to get a buddy, just like in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you can call and say, oops, I'm about to gobble down something. Well, hopefully it's not in your house and you have to at least go buy it, and program that person to say to you whatever you want her to say. Now, if somebody yells at me and says, don't you eat that, I'd hang up on them. I need somebody to say, now, how can I help you? Would you like to come over? can you write in your journal, you know, help me that way. But other people need to be yelled at. So if that's what you need, you tell your partner that this is what you need when this happens. And then I'll give you one more, and that is take that thing you like so much, put it in your mouth, chew it, and then spit it out. And you get that taste in your mouth, but you don't get all that sugar in the bloodstream. So there's other ideas too.
That's very practical. It really is. Well, I want to remind everyone that we're speaking with Nancy Appleton, and our website is nancyappleton.com. And I'm looking at that site now, and it's nice. I like it because as you go right to the front of it, it has some color there, and it's very, very illustrative of what we're looking to maybe tone down and have less of, a lot less of.
Yes, and I will say that you can take a test there to see if you're a sugarholic. So
good.
That will give you a good idea of what's going on.
Okay.
And my books are at discount prices, and there's all sorts of bargains on the website too.
Yeah, a lot of good information. I think, you know, Nancy's approach seems to be very practical and easily understandable. It doesn't have to be complex at all. And you once again, you'll find that at nancyappleton.com, and that's nancyappleton.com. So, you know, check that out. We do have some people that maybe have come to this webinar by way of just the phone bridge line. They may not even be internet savvy. Is there any other way they can contact you?
On my email at nancyappleton@mac.com.
Okay, so it basically either be go to your website or by email. Okay, that's fine. And I think what we'll do now, if this works for you, is we'll go ahead and take some questions that have come in over the internet. And I want to invite anyone listening who wants to join the conversation, by all means, if you're thinking about it, go ahead. If you've dialed in on the conference bridge line, you can dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute your line so that you can speak briefly with Nancy. And then if you're online listening, then just type your question into that small question box underneath the link and submit that to us, and we'll make sure that the question gets asked. So with that, what I think I'll do, and I should check in with you because we're close to the hour point. Are you okay to go a little longer, Nancy, or do you have a scheduled situation?
No,
okay,
that's
good.
Fine.
I wanted to be sure. I don't want to ever disrespect your important time, any person that's come to us the way you have. We've got, let's see, the first one we have is Rose in Corning, California. And she says, stevia does not come from a tree. It is a herbaceous plant. I grow it. I use the whole leaf for sweetener. Also, she didn't, for some reason this is cutting off part of it. Also, she didn't something, rice, et cetera. Any refined grain turns into sugar as soon as the enzymes in the saliva interact with it. What would you say, Nancy?
Let me talk about that.
Okay.
I believe, yes, I understand you can grow it in your backyard, but I also thought that it grew into a tree eventually. Now, number 2, I think there's a difference between rice and white bread and sugar. White it does break down more easily into a simple sugar than brown rice or brown bread or whole wheat bread, I should say. But white rice doesn't suppress the immune system like sugar does, I have to tell you. And there's been many Asians that have been eating white rice for 2 and 3 centuries in all of Southeast Asia, and I've traveled, I've been to 120 countries talking to health officials, etc. There is no brown rice. Sometimes at hotels, they import it from Australia for the hotel Westerners. So it's a different. I'm sorry. I don't believe that it's the same as sugar. Okay, next question.
Okay, then another question came in right after that, from also from Rose in Corning, California. It's not only wheat, but all gluten grains, which include wheat, oats, rye, and barley, can cause mucus production. Any comment
okay.
on that?
Okay, anything can cause mucus production. Carrots can cause mucus if you are allergic to it. And some people are allergic to wheat, but not necessarily the gluten. You're right that oats and barley and spelt all have gluten in them. And if you are allergic to that, you will be allergic to all those. But again, I just said, if you just take out wheat, dairy, and sugar, all forms of sugar, from your diet, you'd be amazed how many people respond to that. But I have to agree with you that if you are allergic to the gluten, which you could be, then all those other grains do the same thing. But again, mucus can be formed by a piece of turkey if you're allergic to it. Anything can cause that inflammation because the food doesn't digest as well, gets into the bloodstream, and then the immune system responds by causing this inflammation to try to deal with this undigested or partially digested food. Okay, next question.
Okay, and John in Peoria says, will a person experience some type of withdrawal symptoms when giving up sugar consumption?
Yes, you certainly can. Let me tell you what can happen. You can get headaches, fatigue, anger, a temperature, shakes. It's amazing. Now, some people can just totally quit sugar and not feel those symptoms, or they can do it and go through those symptoms. But I don't recommend that for most people. I think it's probably better if you have a cup of coffee for breakfast with sugar, divide the sugar in half. Hopefully it'll get rid of the caffeine someday, too. If you eat a piece of pie, eat half of it the first week, divide your sugar in half, and then you won't go through those symptoms. You see, the reason you go through those symptoms is that your endocrine system, the pancreas first and foremost, but all the endocrine system, has to readjust without the sugar. And in the form of readjusting the sugar, it causes these symptoms. So if you slowly wean yourself off of them, you won't have the symptoms anywhere near as much as before. The first day, some people still have them. Those symptoms can go on, oh gosh, 3 or 4 days, the physical symptoms. Then you've got the psychological symptoms of, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. Like I've said in a few times in books, the body says, I don't need this, but your head says, gimme, gimme, gimme. And you have to deal with the psychological, too. I talk about that. You want me to go on with this just for a minute?
Sure. That would be
okay.
Fine.
Okay. In my books, and particularly my newest one, I talk about the psychological and sugar. And many times a person will go to the refrigerator door, open it, looking for something sweet, and I'm using that sugar, that refrigerator for a cupboard or any other door that holds the sugar behind it, and hoping to feel better because of the way they're feeling on the outside. And the sugar will make them feel better for a few minutes or maybe an hour. And I think it's important that when you have that craving, look to see what's going on in your life, where you're not getting the sweetness and you crave the sweetness. Okay, next question.
That's very interesting. Yes, it could be a trigger point to have an awakening or a realization. That's great. Frank in Long Beach, are you familiar with xylitol? Yeah, we talked about that. This substance was first discovered by a German man of the name Emil Fischer in the 1700s. It's extracted from organic hardwood trees, especially birch. Supposedly, it will not raise the glycemic index one iota and considered to be very efficacious in a myriad of ways. What's your opinion? Thank you.
Is it stevia you were talking about?
Stevia, or xylitol. Xylitol.
Oh, xylitol. Well, yeah. It said that there were some different opinions on this, and that in the gum, and I guess other ways, that people feel that it can be beneficial. Well, I'm sorry, I it's not a whole food, and I do my best to eat whole foods. But again, and of course, if you eat too much, you're going to get diarrhea and gas, but you have to eat quite a bit of that to get that. I'm not completely, it's certainly not in the same realm as sugar is, the xylitol and mannitol, et cetera, the what they call sugar alcohols. But I just can't buy it completely. Okay, next one.
Okay. We've got Danny Boy in Montreal. Bless you and all. Just a quick reminder about sodium chloride and Jim Humble. Sorry, got to get this out as much as possible. Let me see. It's cut off there. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay. Any comment on that about
no.
Sodium chloride? And I'm not sure. I don't know. Jim Humble, what is that?
Neither do I.
Oh, okay. All right. So nothing comes to mind on that. Okay. We'll move on to Frank in Long Beach has another question. What do you currently use in various recipes when a sweetener is a required ingredient? Oh, that's a good question.
Okay. My first answer to that is I eat only whole foods. So I don't have a baking recipe or something like that. Again, try your stevia. Try even a small amount of fruit juice in a recipe is certainly not as bad as sugar. That's another thing. But again, I don't eat many whole food. I mean, many processed food, so I don't have to deal with it.
Okay. James in Salt Lake City says, what about animal food?
Well, I guess you mean meat. Do I eat meat? Yes, I do eat meat. I think early man ate meat. I hope to get it organic, and I don't eat too much of it. I try to use it as a condiment, meaning it would be in a stew with tons of vegetables or a very small amount. But, yes, I eat all meats.
Yeah, it would seem that, because you mentioned earlier, some meats, if the meats are cured, they would use typically a sugar curing type process, and that could be a problem if they
yes.
did that. Right.
I agree. Yes, I should make that distinction. I eat fresh meat and fresh fish. The minute you start curing food, you've got a problem. There's all sorts of research now that shows that cured meats cause cancer, cause all sorts of problems. So, you know, that bologna and the salami, all of those are processed meats. And the less you can eat of those, the better.
Yes, it just seems that kind of a rule of thumb, the less processed any food is, probably the better off we are, because it's just like it says, it's been processed. Well, what kind of process? I mean, something's taken out, maybe something else is added in, whatever. I mean, it's altered as to what it was originally in its natural state, and then what's that going to do to the body? Lots of things,
you're right? Beautiful.
Yeah. You know, it's you've just been so clear with what you've shared, you know, right to the point, and you move right through your material with it. It's, you know, it's hard to have too much of a question at this point with, you know, with what you've said. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of little particulars, what about this and what about that, but most of it can follow the course of your common sense approach, a simple, you know, rule of thumb or thermometer to measure it with, whatever. So as far as I don't feel real unclear in any particular area, I really don't. I would, you know, invite any, if there is anyone that has a quick last-minute question, if you want to either dial *2 on your phone keypad if you're on the phone line, or if you want to type your question into the question box and submit that, then that would be great. Otherwise, we'll be moving close to the closing time of our webinar. I do have another question from Frank in Long Beach. Frank says, as an avid fan of the culinary arts, many recipes, both desserts and entrees, are all made from scratch. And preferably, oh boy, this thing, I've got to find out what's going on here. I have to do some extra scrolling here. And preferably, when available, organic ingredients. Would you consider the final product a whole food?
Well, I would if it's a stew or something like that. I don't think I would if it has, it, like a cake, although it's made from raw or organic eggs and raw sugar and whatever. Because those like the wheat, has been processed before you even put it into the cake. So, again, I would... They're wonderful stews and soups and things like that that are whole foods, definitely. But I just can't consider any desserts because you can't just put wheat into a cake. You've got to refine it, take many of the nutrients out, chlorinate it to make a white, etc. So that's my opinion of that.
Okay. And Danny Boy in Montreal asks, any comments on vitamin B17 Laetrile?
No. I do know, but I'm not an authority, so I just as soon stay out of that.
Yeah, there are a lot of sources on them.
Yeah, I guess that's about the time of it. But I'd like to close this by saying that as the White Queen said to Alice in Alice in Wonderland, I eat jam yesterday and I eat jam tomorrow, but I never eat jam today. So you can all think about that.
That's a very good way to look at it. Well, it's been a pleasure. You know, you have certainly presented what you have to say very well, and you know, like the style in which you've done it. And I look forward to meeting you at the 2010 Freedom Law School's Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference coming out
Good.
Next month. And I hope that many of our listeners will also go to the website freedomlawconference.com. It's free to attend the conference. You can just, but they do want you to pre-register, so you go to that site and get pre-registered so that they can have a head count and plan accordingly. And then if you want it either now or at a later time to donate any amount, that's fine. But money is not going to be an issue in this conference. It's really getting the information out and for the speakers and the attendees and everyone to be able to connect and share and learn and grow from the experience. So Nancy will be there along with others that we've spoken to in the last couple of weeks and that we'll speak to the rest of this week and next week as we focus on this conference and feature the speakers from it. And I want to invite everyone, of course, to join us tomorrow. We'll actually have our managing editor, Gary Franchi, who's also head of Restore the Republic and is involved with a number of projects, and he's going to be speaking on something that it's quite hard-hitting and startling from a different perspective, and we'll continue on. Steve Hempling from the Free Enterprise Institute on Friday, and then next week quite a lineup also. Well, Nancy, I really want to thank you, and we'll have this posted on republicmagazine.com/webinar shortly after the webinar so that people can listen again, share it with their friends, and that type of thing. So with that, thank everybody for being here today. This is Earl Bell, and today's speaker has been Nancy Appleton. See you all tomorrow. This officially ends our webinar. Good day.
The moderator has left the conference.